You're listening to America's Web Radio Online. Thanks for tuning in.
And we're certainly pleased to have you listening today to Officer's Oath. This is about Terry Lakin. We've dedicated this hour to the Terry Lakin Action Fund, and we are calling it Officer's Oath because Terry is a very valiant officer, and he took an oath, as did the gentleman online, to our Constitution. We want to welcome Commander Charles Kirshner. And Commander Kirshner, thank you so much for being on America's Web Radio. We got a lot to talk about today, and that's the interesting thing about this administration. Their lives just give us more and more to talk about.
I'm glad to be here on your show again.
Thank you, sir. First off, I know that you were in attendance at the Voters Summit. Well, let me back up a second. Let's talk about Terry for 1 second. What prompted you to get involved or even support the Terry Lakin Action Fund, or Terry?
Well, the issue, I've been actively pursuing it since July of 2008, and by January of 2009, seeing no further lawsuits coming forward, I filed a lawsuit against Obama and the U.S. Congress for lack of due process and unequal protection under the law, and he wasn't also eligible under Article 2, Section 1. And so I've been standing up for my oath and fighting for the Constitution since July of 2008. And then when, of course, I heard about this active duty officer, Terry Lakin, standing up on the active duty side and that he was going to be court-martialed, I felt I had to stand with him, a fellow soldier who was standing up for his oath to the Constitution. I mean, those are the oath, maybe to some people is just a bunch of words, but to me it wasn't, and to Terry it wasn't. Right at the end it says, "So help me God," and if you believe in God and you believe in what your oath stands for, you've got to stand up for it. It's the prime directive of all commissioned military officers to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I never thought I'd have to be fighting a domestic enemy. I never thought I'd see live in a country the way it is today, where we have a domestic enemy within that nobody in controlling legal authority will address. I mean, they're all afraid to address it.
Commander, I've got to ask you. I can only speak for myself, but I was not an officer. I was an enlisted personnel. But
You took an enlisted oath, which starts out with the prime directive and then throws a couple other caveats on and afterwards about having to obey the orders of the president and the officers appointed above you and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. With those three things are not in the officer's oath. We have the sole and only duty to protect the Constitution, whereas you have this conflicting set of lists there that complicates the moral issue before enlisted people. But again, the prime directive leading off is to support and defend the Constitution.
Right. Let me ask you, though, do you think part of our problem today, this is a twofold question, is the fact that we don't have that many people in the military as we used to, and I hated the draft, even with that, we've got a wonderful military, in my opinion, the volunteers, but it's small in comparison to the number to our population. So a lot of people don't understand that oath, and that in some ways when you take that oath, be it officer or enlisted, you're saying, "I'm willing to give up my life for my country. You call
me,
I react." Now, with that being said, I can only speak for myself, but I remember taking the oath and the hairs standing up on my neck and my arms and every place else. Can you think of one person that doesn't happen to when they raise their right hand and take the oath?
I think they all would feel that, I would hope, but at some point along the way here, it seems that the military leadership of our valiant soldiers and sailors out there has let them down and made them feel that it's dangerous to speak up. I blame the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the leadership in Washington for not going to Congress and speaking up on behalf of the military that this usurpation of our Constitution is putting all of our soldiers in a place in a moral dilemma. Their oath to the Constitution and their survival and their job and their livelihood. I mean, they're off fighting wars for our country, and yet they're aware of what's going on, and I'm sure many of them are conflicted.
Well, I want to mention one other thing, and that's this book, Injustice, by J. Christian Adams. He's the attorney that was in the Department of Justice, has written a book, and it addresses the military right to vote, and basically it, by the Obama administration, is being ignored. It's okay if they get their absentee, but don't bust your ass to get it.
Well,
to
sure.
them, you know,
they're suppressing the conservative vote. The military generally is conservative,
right? And if people haven't gotten a copy, please get a copy of Injustice. Okay, I want to move on to.
He also talks about the illegal activities in the DOJ.
It's
completely out of control. I mean.
Well, I tell you what. If we said anything about it on the air at this moment without people reading the book,
right.
we would have a big red rubber stamp of racist thrown against.
Right.
My website, but it's,
but
this
DOJ
is not racist.
It's controlled by a bunch of racists now, like Eric Holder.
Oh, and Loretta
and Obama
King.
Obama himself.
Obama, Loretta King, who is in the DOJ, Rosenbaum. I mean, this book, you can't, I mean, it's certainly nonfiction, and it not only names names, it names dates, and it names what a bunch of, we've been had. We have totally been had. But I want to go on to the voter summit. What, you were there. What did you think of it? And what, my concern, and I mentioned this to you earlier, are we going to be able to consolidate, or has everybody got their own little pet interest and it's going to divide us instead of solidifying?
Well, they all have their own little organizational agendas in the sense of some issue, but they all underlying that claim they adhere to the United States Constitution to support their positions. And yet, when it comes to this issue of Article 2, Section 1, the leaderships of these groups don't want to hear it. The people that I mingled with at this Values Voter Summit all agreed that there's something wrong. Obama needs to be investigated. They happily accepted the flyers and things we handed out and wanted to talk about it. And many of them were aware of it. But you went to the booths and talked to the people staffing these booths. They had the script down. You know, oh, this is nothing. It's a false issue. It's a fringe issue, and we want to beat Obama on policies, and he won the election. That's all that counts. They didn't want to hear it, and in fact, they were quite arrogant and condescending many times in talking to us. Like the American Conservative Union, for one. You know, there's one. You know, the Heritage Society. All these big outfits. The leadership they've marked this whole issue as untouchable. Stay away from it.
Do you feel like they don't understand how important
they understand
this is?
It. They're afraid to go there. They know. You can just tell by talking to them. They know you're right, but they put out the ridicule. That's their defense. Marginalize. These people live and swim in Washington D.C. All these big organizations, and they're all. I mean, you get down there; it's an entirely different world. That's where all the money is. I mean, it just came out with a survey that Washington D.C. has the highest per capita income in the country on average. You know what I mean? You know why? I mean, it's just a black hole for America's wealth and income being sucked down there and being redistributed by a bunch of the socialist Marxists who are in control. And these people people down there, they don't want to swim against the tide. They don't have any courage. Their organization supposedly stands for the Constitution, but you talk about Article 2, Section 1, they act like it doesn't even exist in the Constitution.
You know,
and then they pretend that if it is there, it means born in America, yeah. which is absolutely false. I mean, just look at the recent scrubbing of the Justia.com on the case Minor versus Happersett. I guess we could talk about that later. But they know that the Supreme Court ruled on what a natural born citizen is, and that is born in America of two U.S. citizens.
You know,
1875 case.
Every time I do want to get to that, but I back to Article 2, Section 1.
Right.
I marvel at our forefathers and they were such visionaries.
Yeah.
And
a national security clause they put in there to protect the future of the country after they were gone. National security clause.
Don't you find that just absolutely amazing? And the foresight, the vision, the understanding, and people I can see in the late 1800s, early 20th century saying, oh well, this will never happen. Our forefathers could see that far in advance that somebody not born here, no matter what their credentials are. But not born in the United States by American citizens, how they could have allegiance to other areas. You know, even if it's only just sympathy. It doesn't have to be money or military or anything else. Just if it's sympathetic allegiance to another country besides the United States, it's wrong. And I marvel, absolutely marvel, at our forefathers.
That's because they were very educated men. And extremely well read, they studied all the governments of the world, and they've read all the great works and great thinking, and they also knew men, they knew the weaknesses of man that power and money can corrupt, and they all, two of the two biggest books that they used to justify the revolution and to make the plans for the founding documents and write the founding documents, Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, were based on two major books, the Bible and Littell's The Law of Nations or Principles of Natural Law, i.e. natural law. And both of those books define what a natural-born citizen is. Littell's Volume 1, Chapter 19, Section 212, natural-born citizen is a person born in the country of parents who are citizens. In the Bible, Deuteronomy 17:15 says you should pick your king, and they're talking about kings and not presidents, from your brothers, not from a foreign tribe. You know what I mean? There's the message.
It's pretty exacting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be. John Jay wrote to George Washington that the future, the presidency who is going to be in command of our army should not devolve to a foreigner. Obama's a foreigner. His father was a foreign national. We have the first president in the history of the United States whose father was a foreign national, always was a foreign national, never intended to become a citizen, wasn't an immigrant, never became a citizen, didn't even live in this country as a permanent resident. The first time in the history of the country we have a foreign national for the father of our president, who had no interest in this country whatsoever. In fact, he hated America. Obama was born a British subject. He was born a dual citizen. He was raised his early life in a foreign country, Indonesia, adopted there with an Indonesian citizen. This is not a natural-born citizen. He's dual citizen, maybe triple citizen.
And in my opinion, only my opinion, hates America.
Absolutely, he hates America. His book, Dreams from My Father, was a message that he wants to implement what his father couldn't do, and that is convert the world to Marxism. And the thing is, he wrote his first book. It was full of a lot more hateful speech. They scrubbed the reprinted version that he used before he came out for election. The reprints were scrubbed. You got to pay like a couple $1,000 to buy one of the original editions. There's only like a couple thousand in print. They have much more hateful speech in those, much more racist rhetoric.
Commander
Obama's
Pershing?
A racist. He hates white people.
Oh, and does his wife.
His family in Kenya wrote and said that they did not want their black blood sullied by a white woman.
Hmm.
Now, that, you know, can you get more racist than that?
I don't think so. Do you, Commander, do you mind if we just keep going?
I don't mind.
So much talking to you, and I am responsible only to myself as far as commercials go, so I'll make them up later in the day, but you have too many important things to say, and we need to get them on the air. Why in your mind, you're a well-educated man, and I know what it takes to become a commander in the Navy, and I certainly respect you, and if you walked in the door, I'd salute you and then give you a handshake. But beyond that, what is the problem, in your opinion, of people not understanding the gravity of Article 2, Section 1, and what can follow? I mean, this is sort of like winning the revolution and then turning around and asking a Frenchman or after we've defeated the Indians, asking one of them to be president of the United States. Well, we know where their allegiance is going to be.
Well, the problem is there's millions of people that know the gravity, and Congress ignored us in 2008. I mean, there was a petition of 500,000 signers alone prepared by WorldNet Daily. I think it was 400,000 or 500,000. So, you know, even then, there was hundreds and hundreds of thousands greatly enough concerned to write to Congress. They ignored us, and they were able to get away with it because the media, the mainstream media, all the media, the TV, talking heads, and the major newspapers will not allow this to be factually addressed. They turn it into a ridicule campaign, or they use the R word or whatever they can to keep the people, the tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people, from gelling together as a unit and demanding action. They keep everybody segregated and compartmentalized. It's a tactic. They don't want the traction to be gained to the point of view that they have to do something.
Do you? Well, it seems like
it's yellow journalism in reverse. When yellow journalism is when the media stirred up the passions of the people to go into a war or something like that, like the Spanish-American War is a classic example of yellow journalism in use. I mean, that's what I learned when I studied a little bit of journalism. Now, that is in reverse with the media now. They are suppressing all passions to investigate this issue. But they're still there. I mean, the polls indicate the people, by a majority, want an investigation. They at least want an investigation. I saw one in South Carolina just several weeks ago that about two-thirds of the likely voters in the Republican primary want Obama investigated for his identity and birth certificate being forged and Social Security number fraud. They want those issues investigated. They don't say they necessarily 100% believe in them, but they say that it should be investigated.
Well, there's enough evidence right now that there's no question the sheriff should be banging on the White House door.
Absolutely.
You know, it's
draft registration. He backdated and forged his draft registration. He would have been a draft card burner based on his accounts of what he was doing at Occidental College when he was 18 years old. But he didn't have one because he was there as a foreign citizen. He was Indonesian then, or Kenyan with a British passport, likely Indonesian though, and he was probably getting aid to be there as a foreign student. He was living in this foreign student's dorm with a fellow from Pakistan. So he's a chameleon. He changes citizenship all his life to suit his needs. I mean, he's a fraud. He's a grifter. He's a con man. And now he's the putative president of the United States. I mean, this is unbelievable that I'm living in this country. I can't believe what's going on.
Well, you know, I think he won on a guilt trip. I didn't.
Absolutely.
I didn't. I couldn't have supported him under any circumstance. But, you know, people, I think a lot of people voting, well, we need to, you know, we shouldn't be racist. We should, and I'm going to vote for him because, you know.
Right.
And at the same token, he was slicker than KNY ointment, you know.
But, and he also had hundreds of millions of dollars of foreign money infiltrated into his campaign in small amounts with donations made by names like Mickey Mouse and everybody, you know, right out of the phone book. $50, $100, all untraceable. They turned off all traceability of matching a name with an address for their credit card processing, debit card processing. So they didn't care if their whose name was on the card and who was saying that was making a donation. They took the money if the card was good.
Do you think after these 3 years, not obviously because of the main media, but because of the internet and word of mouth, and some very conservative organization, and the Tea Party. I got to give them, however, they don't address the birthing issue. But do you feel like at least enough questions are being asked that something will slowly but surely come to it? Are we better off today trying to get information than we were 3 years ago?
I've always said the truth will come out. It's going to come out. But sometimes I wonder, when you look at the novel 1984 and the way history was rewritten one way, then rewritten the opposite way, depending on the agenda of the inner party. You remember that story?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the person in power gets to rewrite history. So maybe it might take decades for it to come out.
You know, just what you said, I hate that term. There is no such an animal as rewriting history. History is history. History is
right,
an account
right.
of what happened. Not me writing it, not you
mm-hmm.
writing it, or anybody else. It's a record of what happened. Let's go back to the case in the Supreme Court where they just did away with records. They just...
Well, the Supreme Court publishes their decisions, their opinions, and their rulings. And then these various online groups republish them for the rather than making it an easier format for lawyers and things like that. And there are several pay agencies that do that, like FindLaw and I think it's FindLaw and LexisNexis and whatever. But you have to pay for that. Now there's a public one called Justia.com, and they offer like a free public library access to all the legal decisions of the Supreme Court. And we have just learned in the last 30 days that they had scrubbed all references to the lawsuit Minor versus Happersett when it came to a case involving citizenship since the case was decided in 1875. So that case was brought by a woman who said, I'm a citizen of the United States, and I want to be able to vote. And she was challenging the voters' rights, but to get standing in the case, she had to prove she was a citizen. So the court looked at it, and they said, well, not only is she a citizen of the United States, she's a natural-born citizen of the United States, and they define what a natural-born citizen is, and that is a person born in the country of two citizen parents. And they said she is that. So, you know, that was part of the getting the case even listened to. You had to prove that she was a citizen. In other words, to argue that as a citizen, I should be entitled to vote. Now, the court denied her the right to vote, but they declared her a natural-born citizen. Now, subsequent law cases, 25 of them, referenced that case when it came to citizenship. And they scrubbed them all. The Justia.com organization scrubbed all references to that case having anything to do with citizenship.
Okay, when you...
Imagine that. That's a felony. That's a crime under the United States Code to alter the text of a Supreme Court decision. They didn't paraphrase. They published them as full text. It states right in their webpage, this is the full text. And yet they took out words, they took out whole sentences sometimes, they took out references selectively on Minor versus Happersett.
Now,
that case set precedence for who is a natural-born citizen in the Supreme Court. Now, prior to that, natural law told us what it was. The founders knew what it was. But that particular case clearly spelled it out in 1875.
Now, can we still get the actual...
Yes. Oh, yes. Now,
okay.
Justia.com is scrambling. They put it back to normal. They reversed it all. Attorney Leo Donofrio is the one that's on their case about this. And he's reported them to the Supreme Court and various other legal organizations. But, you know, will they do anything about it? What they've done now is they put in special code in their in their organization sites so that you cannot now see the Wayback Time Machine to see the way it was when it was altered. You know, you used to be able to see where the way it was when it was right. You could see when about what month it was altered, and then what month they put it back, which is just now for a couple cases was in July, and the rest of them is now. Now they blocked that, so you cannot see the evidence anymore of the changes. But screenshots were made, and the evidence is in the hands of attorneys. That if they can get traction on this, the Justia.com is in big trouble. But how can we get the DOJ to prosecute the Justia.com for publishing incorrect versions of Supreme Court decision, which is against U.S. code, when the DOJ is totally in the pocket of Obama?
Who is totally
now,
in
you
the
also
pocket,
know that the owner of Justia.com was a part of the, he was on a campaign for Obama for America. What's the name of that organization? He was involved with that. So there you have the owner of an organization altering a key case reference in prior citizenship cases of Niner versus Hafiz at 1875, who's on the campaign or he's part of the campaign organization, and he's modifying case law that would have declared Obama ineligible.
You know, there is so much. Document. I mean, you know, it's like the forged long form birth certificate. What a crock! I mean, that was
yes.
that was proven forgery within minutes of it coming out.
It's a third grader's forgery. I mean, the experts. It took them all of 60 seconds to see it's a forgery.
And then you have the Social Security case where if that were you or me, we'd be having this conversation
right.
In cells.
For your listeners, the Social Security case is Obama is using a Social Security number in his tax return, and he used it to backdate as falsely his draft registration, a Connecticut Social Security number when he never lived in Connecticut at all, never a legal resident there, never was living there, and he's got a Connecticut Social Security number issued in March 1977, when in March 1977 he was in Hawaii, and in March 77 to get a Social Security number. If you were over age 12 and getting a number for the first time, you had to appear in person. So, you know, how are we supposed to believe that Obama, age 15, in Hawaii, got a Social Security number in Connecticut? He had to appear in person. He wasn't in Connecticut. It's a stolen Social Security number. He stole the Social Security number of a dead person.
Why is your congressman, mine's perfect, so I know why he's not saying anything. Why is your congressman not saying anything? Still
he won't answer me. Charlie Dent from Pennsylvania. He doesn't answer my letters, emails, or anything. He just totally ignores me. I mean, I went to see another elected official here, and he just looked. They just stare through you like you're not even there, like a deer in a headlight. They don't want to hear it. They're all afraid of this. I don't know. They backed themselves in the corner. The Republican Party was complicit in this. The leadership of the Republican Party was driving this as much as Obama was because they wanted McCain to run and they wanted natural-born citizenship to go away because McCain had a flaw in his natural-born citizenship, being born in Panama. So they don't want to buck the party leadership. Carl Rove is out there today saying this is all a fringe issue, yet more than half the Americans wanted to investigate it. So, half of America is a fringe issue.
Let me ask, what else in your mind can we as individuals, what can we do? Is it now
we have
to...
Let me say something more about Karl Rove before we go on.
Sure.
Karl Rove is supposedly Bush's brains, right? You heard us say that Karl Rove is Bush's brain. Bush and Cheney suppressed any investigations of this after Obama won the election. They are the culprits for allowing this to get as far as it did. I mean, the Republican Party and Bush and Cheney prevented any investigations from proceeding into the eligibility of Obama to be sworn in. In other words, okay, he won the popular election. Under our Constitution, he then definitely has to prove he's eligible. Bush and Cheney and the administration, Karl Rove probably leading them, prevented that from happening. They said he won the election, he's the president. So, in other words, we're now a pure democracy, and 53% of the vote trumps the Constitution. That doesn't work that way. But they allowed that to happen. They're as much to blame in this as perpetrated this fraud. They are accessories of the fact.
You know,
this is not about political parties. This is not about race. This is about legal, constitutional issues. Article 2, Section 1. What does it mean? We know what the founders and framers said it means. We know what the minor versus Harris at the Supreme Court said it means. They don't want the people to know what it means.
This is just.
Now look at what they're going to do. They want to, you know how they're going to make Obama's usurpation permanent? By running an ineligible vice presidential candidate.
Rubio.
Yep. If they get that, if they put him through and he's elected and sworn in, in other words, they just completely took out Article 2, Section 1 and ignore it. Two elections in a row, fraud has been committed openly and willingly by both parties, and nothing was done about it. See what I mean?
What do we do? What do we do?
Somehow, I think the only practical solution is somehow the people have to take over the Republican Party completely and get it back to the Constitution. I think to do that in the Democratic Party is possible. They're leadership is controlled by socialists, hardcore Marxists. I guess something like 70 to 90 members of the Congress who are the leaders of the Congressional Black Caucus and the Progressive Caucus. They're actually card-carrying members of the Democratic Socialists of America, which is a communist organization, a socialist Marxist organization. So that's beyond hope. But maybe we can get control of the Republican Party. We look at what we did in the November election, and then Speaker Boehner takes that victory and peters it away. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
He became a speaker because of the people like us that were concerned about what's happening to our country, and yet he's done nothing to address our questions. Nothing.
And I don't think has any intent to.
No.
I think
no,
he. I'm having.
As they say, the socialists control this country. No matter which party you elect, they got two wings of the same bird, right? Just one's flapping harder for socialism than the other one is. Well, we've got to change that. We've got to take the Republican Party back to the Constitution. Now, you could say, "Gotta start a third party," but that's almost impossible the way the laws in this country are started. In effect, a third party of conservatives almost guarantees the election of Obama again. By splitting the anti-Obama vote.
Let me ask, I know you live up north. Mm-hmm. Are you all having community meetings? What are the folks up there saying? When you're talking to friends, neighbors, what are they saying?
Well, they all say somebody should be doing something, and I say, I am, what are you doing? And then that's when the rubber meets the road, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm too busy. I've got my family to take care of. They're all corrupt in Washington. You know, the usual cliche answers. People, TV and the major, it's like very few people have the courage to stand up and do anything about this.
That's I'm only one person. I can't do anything. Well,
it takes the media to get the masses of people sufficiently infuriated to get something done, and that's my observation after 3.5 years of fighting this.
That's not going to happen for now. I don't know what would
either that or when Obama takes over like Hugo Chavez. I mean, then or something like that happens, and then the people realize that then it's maybe too late. Then maybe something might happen, but it'll be almost too late. Then it's almost too late now. The way things are going.
This is, proof positive of the old statement, the pen is mightier than the sword. Well,
yes.
The pen being the media right now is, they're dominating. And
yes.
It's like Terry's case. When I look at the news here locally and it's talking about, somebody's backyard having sewer in it, well, our whole country has sewage in it, and we're not saying a word about it. And people should have been flocking, absolutely flocking, to Terry's defense and to his aid and to helping him and understanding what he was doing.
The Republican Party should be, they're normally blood sport enemies of the Democratic Party, right? They should be, at this point, jumping all over this issue with Obama. They're not. Instead, they're attacking people like you and me. I mean, look at the, again, the Rubio thing. I wrote a blog in...
Yeah, let's go into depth on that.
Yeah, I wrote a blog in May 27th, 2011, about the fact that I had been trying to get Rubio to address the citizenship status of his parents when he was born, and you know, emails to their office were going unanswered, and I had people call up and people write him letters, volunteers that work with me, and they just ignored him or gave him answers like, "Well, nobody ever asked that. We'll have to check into it and get back to you." But after maybe about 10 months of that, as of May. I decided as an amateur hobby genealogist, I'm going to get his naturalization papers for his parents, his father at least, because he was deceased, and see what. And I found out that he wasn't, his parents didn't become citizens until 1975, and he was born in 1971. So he was obfuscating and avoiding the issue for a reason. He knew he had an issue there, and he didn't want it to be public. And then along the way, as part of that, I also saw that his parents came to USA as ordinary immigrants seeking a better job in May of 56, and yet Rubio had been stating all along that his parents came here to get out of Cuba after Fidel Castro took over, you know, avoid the communist takeover, and that was not correct. But the main issue I was concerned about is natural-born citizenship. Now, anyway, instead of Republican Party standing up for the Constitution, or Rubio standing up for the Constitution, you know, what do? They attack us, and the left did it. I mean, the Associated Press wrote a story about this, in particular when they mentioned me, say, for example. I mean, it was full of inaccuracy. First of all, they said I was a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. Second of all, they said it's a racist issue, racial. They cited the fact that I had spoken out about Rubio and Jindal. But they didn't cite the fact that I spoke out against John McCain too. Now, is John McCain a minority? No, he's as white as you can get. Is Rubio really a minority? He looks Caucasian to me. He could be totally from the old stock Spanish conquistador families of Cuba. Has anybody done his genealogy? He doesn't look like a minority. He doesn't look brown skinned to me. They call him brown skinned. Does Rubio look brown skinned to you?
No.
That's right. So just because he speaks, you know, comes from a Spanish family, doesn't mean he's brown-skinned. They're the Cuban elite, the Cuban families, the upper class down there, and many, many of the middle class were descendants of the pure European conquistador stock that came there. You know what I'm saying, David?
I know exactly what you're saying. And
so
I'm...
let's... Before we accept the fact that that could be a blatant misrepresentation, they should really check into his genealogy and see, is he descendant of blacks or Indians from Cuba, or is he a descendant of all European stock, in other words, Spanish?
But that, you know, bottom line...
That's irrelevant to the constitutional issue, but they throw it out. They say that I'm a lawyer... False, and I'm pursuing this for racial reasons. False. It has to do with the Constitution. I've spoken out against John McCain, Rubio, Jindal. All three of them have flaws in their natural-born citizenship per Article 2, Section 1.
You know, Commander, I've gotten some of this, even from close friends. Rubio, you know, that there might be a question, but he's, you know, he's okay, and it's all right if it's him. It's just not all right.
Yeah, he's our usurper.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's our conservative usurper, so he's okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if you don't abide by the Constitution, you're not a conservative.
Well, and it's sort of like I get in arguments frequently, more frequently than I probably should, about immigration. And
yep.
You know, it's either lawful or it's not.
Exactly.
And if it ain't and you don't like it, then work to change it. But
well, you see what they do
law,
with the language, David. They forget the word illegal immigration whenever they talk about immigration. Same thing with citizenship. They forget the adjective natural born in front of the word citizen in Article 2. They say, well, Rubio's a citizen. You know, Jindal's a citizen. You know, McCain's a citizen. Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is, are they natural born citizens to Article 2, Section 1 constitutional standards? I say no.
And that's with you saying no, and if we are to believe that our Constitution is the basis of all of our laws, that's the end of the story, you know?
That's right. And why wouldn't a controlling legal authority, such as a court, accept the case to decide what the constitutional meaning of those that term is in Article 2 to reaffirm Minor versus Hatterset, or if they, you know, if they wanted to like overturn it? And or why doesn't Congress hold a congressional investigation into the issue, and also the criminal issues of Obama? And my answer is because they're afraid. They know the answer. They know the answer, and they don't want to go there.
You know, at this point, I think you're dead on. They have to know the answer. They're,
absolutely,
you know, they
know the
have
answer.
To know
why
the
would
answer.
They scrub those lawsuits? Why would they do that? They know that those were incriminating.
Just.
They know the Supreme Court decided what a natural-born citizen was. So they had to scrub all reference to that lawsuit since 1875 in the Supreme Court records that were available to the general public.
It's amazing. You know,
like you go into the public library and pull out every reference to some lawsuit. That's what they did. It's criminal.
This
is a conspiracy. This is... The people paint a tinfoil hat. Conspiracy theory. Well, a conspiracy theory may be tinfoil, but it is not a theory anymore. This was a conspiracy to defraud the American people in the 2008 election. An absolute conspiracy. Conspiracies do exist. There are real conspiracies, and there are conspiracy theories. This was a conspiracy to defraud the American people in the 2008 election.
Well,
in the 2008 election, we had McCain, Obama, and Calero in the Socialist Party. All three of them were constitutionally ineligible. They were not natural-born citizens to the standards and intent of the founders of the United States Constitution.
You know, I love this when you get the person that says, well, we have a living Constitution, and things change as No, our Constitution, to my knowledge, has never taken a breath.
No, it is a fundamental written law of our country against all which all other laws should be judged. Constitution is written law. It does not breathe and live.
And
change depending on what 51% of people mean. Say it means.
I had mentioned this to you that I might ask this question.
And the point is, though, back up on the Constitution.
Sure.
If there is some discrepancy as to what a certain clause is supposed to mean, our courts are supposed to address that. Our courts avoided the constitutional interpretation. They didn't want to go there because they didn't want to upset the political apple cart because they knew the political apple cart had it all wrong, and that natural-born citizen is what I quoted, which is born in the country of two U.S. citizens. They knew the answer, and they didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
And this is
so
this is
they,
all
they completely abdicated their responsibility under our system, where the courts are supposed to interpret the Constitution correctly per the written word and what it meant when it was written. They didn't even want to go there at all because they were afraid of it. They knew that the people that were protesting the 2008 election were right.
And this is the
so they hid behind standing and said no citizen has standing. To ask a question.
If I don't have standing as a citizen, then I guess the question is, who does?
And if I don't have standing as a citizen and also as a person who swore an oath to uphold and support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, I put in my court case, I have an unalienable right to come forward to defend that Constitution. We the people, I am one of those people. I'm asking the courts to resolve this once again. To reaffirm Minor versus Hatterset. Or if you want to make it a breathing, living constitution, at least address it and put your phony breathing into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they wouldn't even go there. They wouldn't even take a case. They ducked it. They know because they could not intellectually, honestly say that Obama's campaign and Obama's arguments were right. They didn't intellectually could not make the arguments based on case law and natural law, international law, U.S. law. They knew a natural born citizen is, and Obama wasn't one.
we've had a takeover of our government by someone that shouldn't be in power.
We've thrown away the best constitutional republic that ever existed in the history of the world.
And
we've thrown it away.
And part of the throwing away has been through his Department of Justice.
Yep.
And continues to do this.
Right.
The intimidation that was caught on television, there couldn't have been more evidence. I mean, you got...
Well, look, I'm speaking out in favor of the Occupy Wall Street crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are anarchists. You think of the most unlawful group of people that would completely change America into a socialist dictatorship. Those are them out there, and he's speaking out in favor of them, and claims they're just like the Tea Party. I mean, the Tea Party came one day, made their statement, and went home. They didn't, and they went home and left the place cleaner than when they got there. I mean,
they also had
people
permit.
In these cities are a bunch of slobs.
The Tea Party has always had permits to gather, which brings me to the point, and I mentioned this, and I just want your quick take on it. And we both agree, actually, I think. Governor Perdue's statement, which has not gotten the coverage that I think it should have, because it's a very scary underlying statement, and that is 2 weeks ago she said that there was so much that needed to be done that we shouldn't have elections in 2012.
That's right, because they see a landslide coming against them. Obama is a disaster waiting to happen to them unless they figure out how to rig those machines and steal the vote. But that was a trial balloon. I mean, I think this whole Occupy Wall Street thing is a trial balloon. It's almost like a military drill of how to put together a national take over the cities evolution. You know that behind the scenes there's organized groups feeding and providing necessary items for these people, the ones that want to take a bath, they give them wipes and things, you know. So there's an orchestrated effort behind the scenes funding this and providing the ability for them to stay there. And they certainly aren't leaving the place cleaner than when they came there. They've turned these parks into pigsties. Urinating in public, defecating on police cars, selling dope, doing dope. A dog bit a reporter the other day there because the reporter tried to report on what was going on there. This guy sticked the dog on him. These people are out of control, and I think this is some sort of a drill to put together a national protest event in all the major cities of the USA. Maybe next year, when they're going to suspend the elections, it may all be trial balloons and drills for what's coming.
Our mayor here in Atlanta, it's like the old cartoon. I can't remember which whether it was Donald Duck or who it was, but. There was a cartoon about, well, I dare you to step over this line. I dare you to step over this line. And he keeps retreating and drawing a line in the sand. This is exactly what our mayor has done here in Atlanta.
That might have been Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny. I don't know. But it's exactly, to the nth degree, what the mayor's done. Well, I'm going to pick him up.
Political correctness gone crazy. Nobody wants to confront the bully. And the bully is Obama and his Marxist-Socialist allies.
I want to, from a personal standpoint, more so than military, but obviously as a commander you have to have your feelings. I found it very interesting, Obama and what happened last week. Obama declaring that we'll be out of Iraq by Christmas. And even just the way he did it, and then on top of that, the death.
And Iran will be in Iraq by the next Christmas.
Is that?
I can see it coming. Look at the Sharia law has been declared the foundational law of Libya now just the other day. the whole Middle East is, you know, this is the other issue that Obama is using is radical Islam. That's the sources of his money, and that's, I believe that in his heart. He's a practicer of Islam. I think that they have a tenet, it's called the taqiqa or something like that, meaning that you can lie to promote the faith. And I think he's lying about who he really is and what he really intends as far as his religious beliefs. I think he's for the Islamic caliphate and taking over the world.
And
Islam. Now, what's going to happen when the Marxist socialist atheists no longer are allied with the radical Islamists? I mean, isn't that, one of them is going to be useful idiots, aren't they? they're going to be killing each other after the bastion of the Constitutional Republic has been destroyed by both of them.
But in this is Islam. They've never not been in a war. The tribes.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
from day one,
the Prophet Muhammad spread his philosophy by the sword. Absolutely, the Christianity was spread by the word of mouth and peaceful means until the Romans took it over, and then of course it changed too. But we don't want to get into historical religions. But what's going on in the Middle East and pulling out of Iraq? I mean, Obama knows that it's going to likely fall to the Iranians within the year. I mean, we don't have a 5 or 15,000 troops there as a tripwire to keep Iran from moving in. I mean, that's what they put troops there on the border of Korea for the same reason, so that North Korea isn't going to come down there because they'd have to go through American troops and that would start a war with us. So that's like a tripwire deployment. And we should have left a heavy armored division there, in Iraq, near the border of Iran, the most likely place that they'd be trying to come through, just simply as a tripwire, because that would keep the Iranians from doing it, because they know that there'd be overwhelming force coming back at them if they attacked an American deployed unit.
So, unless Obama has already destroyed our military to the point we wouldn't have anything to fight with.
Well, he's doing that with his social experiments and repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, that's more to destroy the morale of the military than anything I can think of.
You know, another interesting thing is Saudi Arabia...
I blame the Joint Chiefs of Staff for not standing up to that. I blame the Joint Chiefs for not going to Congress to get this issue of Obama's illegitimacy and criminal activities addressed. They could have gone back channel to Congress and made things happen. I mean, the military doesn't have to openly revolt. They could do it in back channels, the leadership of the military, and tell Congress, you've got to investigate.
Well,
they mean they go to him and say we need 13 carriers or 11 carriers. They have their secret testimonies in these armed forces committees and whatever, national security committees. They could go in there and brief them and say, this is not right.
Yeah, may I ask something that it's my opinion, it's my observation. Basically, anything over a lieutenant colonel or equivalent, or not lieutenant, but anything over a colonel, bird colonel, and depending on the branch or whatever, beyond a bird colonel is politics. Politicians.
Yeah. When you get to the flag officers, it's all politics. Even the full bird colonel, which is 06, I mean, it's very political. But definitely above 07 and above, the flag officers, your admirals and generals, it's all politics, and they're afraid to rock the boat till they get the next star. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
There's very few exceptions, and the ones that do rock the boat get drummed out. Look at General Boykin, three-star general, spoke out about radical Islam, and he got drummed out, got pushed out.
One last quick question regarding the Middle East. My understanding was that, supposedly, and I have no proof of it, no one knows exactly, that Saudi Arabia had paid for part of Obama's education, if not all of it, quote-unquote, supposedly at Harvard.
Yeah, well, there's a video on my website about that by Percy Sutton. He was interviewed, and he actually stated that he got wrote letters and helped get funding for Obama to get into Harvard. I heard a number like $20 million given to the trust fund. But anyway, since you mentioned my website, it's protectourliberty.org, protectourliberty.org, and also my blog is commanderkirchner.wordpress.com, and that commander is abbreviated as CDR. So CDR Kirchner, my name is K-E-R-C-H-N-E-R, cdrkirchner.wordpress.com. But if they go to protectourliberty.org and scroll down there, there's a video there by Percy Sutton being interviewed telling how the influence of a sheikh in Saudi Arabia was used to get money to get Obama into Harvard.
Okay, with that, let me ask this question, and maybe correct me if I'm mistaken.
You know who Percy Sutton was? That was Malcolm X's lawyer.
Yeah, which, well, that's a whole other subject. But
right.
Saudi Arabia, in my understanding, is scared to death of Iran. How do you
think because Saudi is Sunni and Iran is Shiite. Again, it's my enemy's enemy is my friend. You know, the eastern part of Iraq is Shiite, and the western part of Iraq is Sunni. You see what I mean? So the Iranians may move into Iraq and take the eastern part, but they will face a lot of opposition in the western part. So the Saudis will obviously provide the money and the resources to use whatever military force they can put in there to block them from taking over all of Iraq. Maybe the Turks will come down then and take over the northern Iraq rather than let the Iranians get it all, because that oil field up north there, what's it, mm-hmm. The town up north of Iraq, where there's a group there, a tribal group that straddles both the borders of Turkey, northern Iraq, and that corner of Iran. They've been fighting for their freedom for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
The Turks have had a lot of problems with them. They'd come down and take northern Iraq, and the Iranians will take southeastern Iraq, and the western part will probably be somehow saved by the Saudi influence because they're Sunnis. So, these people are only allies to fight their common enemy, who they think is United States.
And then there's Israel that better be preparing.
Yeah, they're in big trouble. They're really being surrounded more and more by forces that have the government now openly against them. With Libya, if it goes from Sharia law to radical Islam, that'll be another major enemy with lots of money from their oil resources to trouble with Israel. That's it's like a giant aircraft carrier for us in that area, that we can land troops and resources and not have to worry about an opposed landing. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think we should have exited Iraq through Syria. To tell you the truth, we should have took the seventh. The armored corps we had there and drove out through Syria,
finished
them off,
and taken no hostages as we did it.
Well, we don't have to do that. They surrender, we'll lock them up. But we could have gone through Syria like Swiss cheese on our way to the border of the Mediterranean coast and then embarked the heavy armor from there.
Commander Kirchner,
I'm just talking a little bit of military facetiousism there.
Well, we're having a good time.
Around.
I want to thank you for coming on Officer's Oath, the Terry Lakin Show, and
mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for everything you're doing, and you are proof positive. It may be one step at a time, but one person can make a difference, and you're making the difference, and I hope by being on, we're making a little bit of difference as well. I know this show will be posted on the Terry Lakin site tomorrow, as well as on our site. And if people have questions, they're welcome to email me, and I'll get them to Commander Kirchner. Sir, thank you very much, and I look forward to the next time we can get together on the radio.
Very good. Glad to do it, and you have a great day, and God bless America, and hope we can still straighten this out. But boy, it doesn't look too good.
Well, we'll find out whether a cruiser can be turned around or a aircraft carrier can be turned around in a bathtub.
That isn't too likely, but I'm hoping it's not that bad yet. But it's not looking good.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you again, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye.